welcome to the MMQB NFL Podcast. I'm Gary Granlin.
And I'm Connor Orr.
And Connor, there's the much awaited, much promised, much existent show about the Black Monday firings in the coaching world. And also, we are going to do a little wild card run through, size up these games a little bit. But yeah, man, we didn't have a super busy sort of coach carousel spin here, at least not yet. Obviously, Sean McVay kind of remains up in the air, though we might not really get clarity on that for quite a while. But obviously, we've covered Denver's move with Nathaniel Hackett, the Colts, and their stuff with Frank Reich and the Panthers moving on from Matt Rhule. The two that happened since we last spoke to each other. First, we'll start with the Cardinals. Cliff Kingsbury is out. Steve Keim submitted his resignation, which was accepted. So a reset with the brain trust here in Arizona, which I guess the one thing I'll say is, you know, better than sunk cost fallacy here. They are, you know, the Bidwell family is moving on from a pretty sizable mistake.
Yeah. The big question, though, is are they really, right? Because at least in the immediate aftermath of that job, and even before Keim submitted his resignation, what I was hearing was there's a strong sense now from people whose job it is to prepare candidates for these openings that they want to just bump up Vance Joseph. They want to keep the two people that they interviewed in-house and make them kind of co-GMs and sort of roll with that. Because what's interesting about that job is I think not only did Cliff and not only did Keim get some extensions like down the road here, like I think there are some other people within that circle of the coaching staff that were also promised that they could stay there for a while. And so, you know, what I wrote on our website the other day was just, you know, is he going to swing for the fences here, or is he going to sort of hedge the bets and say like, okay, I made a change, but I didn't really make a change because like this is a lot of people to pay, you know, if I don't want to make a change here. So I'm interested to see where they're going. You have a top, theoretically, like a top 10 quarterback when he's healthy. You have a high draft pick. And this roster needs an awful lot of turnover, but still, you should be swinging for the fences on this job. I think people like Arizona.
I think people like Arizona. It's also, you know, it's a low-pressure job, and especially in year one where you won't have Kyler Murray for probably the first few weeks of the season, you get a little bit of leeway there. You can spend that year kind of hitting the reset and feeling your way through and not feel like you have to go out and make a run at the postseason, which they probably will not. What is really interesting to me here, and let's say they either promote Vance Joseph, which I'd be fine with. I do think Vance Joseph got a raw deal in Denver,
yes,
which is you know becoming something of a thing
these days
out there.
Yeah.
Yep. Or they go with the defensive head coach. Who is going to sort of jump the chance to work with this offense? You had a head coach previously who handpicked this quarterback, and it was kind of a marriage that was set up. I mean, this is you know, the coach who was supposed to be perfect for Kyler Murray, and Kyler Murray was supposed to be the fit in what they were going to do offensively, sort of building off of the air raid principles that Cliff Kingsbury came in with. So, you know, we talked about a little bit about this last offseason. Can you pluck like a Shanahan disciple and try and do some of that stuff with Kyler Murray? Physically, he's capable of doing it. Is he going to be comfortable doing it? He's basically operated some, you know, variation of this offense going back to his college days. And how much different can you make it for him at this point and still have him be comfortable? How long is that transition going to take, especially when he can't get on the field this upcoming summer? The other thing that kind of sticks out to me here is, and this is another thing we discussed, It was a little bit unlucky, but also probably just not the best player in the world. They had built an offense that required a really deep and really talented receiving core. And all of a sudden, we saw last offseason, the price for wide receivers just went through the roof. I don't know how they were going to be able to assemble the kind of offensive personnel they needed to make it work under Cliff Kingsbury with basically the... the finite resources you have to build an NFL team.
So I think a couple of points there that are interesting to me. I think you could make a somewhat quick and offensively lateral maneuver by going to get one of the McVay guys, because my understanding is that offense really lost a majority of its air raid principles a couple of weeks into the first season of Cliff Kingsbury being there. Like, I think they really did try to do air raid, pure air raid, but you kind of learn quickly that it's just not feasible in the long term at the NFL level. You have to blend it with a lot of other stuff, to the point where I would guess most of the folks there would say that they're closer to the Rams than they are Texas Tech, right? Or, you know, maybe even Kansas City, right?
From a talent standpoint or a scheme standpoint?
So I think that's a move that you could make. And, you know, I said this before. I wrote this a couple times. This is the best year to hire a Rams guy because that staff was still good. And, you know, like, let's say that they were in the playoffs right now. There'd be three or four guys from that staff that you'd be interviewing for head coaching jobs. Raheem Morris, Thomas Brown, you know, maybe Jake Pete, Zach Robinson, you know. So why not just do what people were going to do anyway if they were successful this year? Like, that's what's so silly about all this. But I also understand the opposite of this. I feel like in saying that, sticking with Vance Joseph is going to be sort of a lame maneuver by the Cardinals, I'm ignoring Vance Joseph's contributions to this team and Jeff Rogers, who's the special teams coordinator and the assistant head coach, which have been Herculean in terms of, you know, the reason we see all these other college coaches fail and we saw Cliff Kingsbury succeed is because these two guys dug in and did a lot of work and helped prop him up and took care of some of the locker room stuff, a lot of that. And so Cliff's a good coach, but I think a lot of these other guys did the work, and so did some of the work. And so, all right, do you give him a shot and say, hey, you've been doing a head coach's job on a defensive coordinator salary. Here you go. Good luck. Possibly. But then do you run the risk, if you're Bidwell, of doing the same thing that you did to Steve Wilks and letting this thing bottom out with another minority head coach and then kind of look like the Texans, where there seems to be sort of a troubling pattern here, right? I mean, yeah. I don't want to take it there, but I'm just, you know, and we're getting way far down the road. Vance Joseph could be 11-5 or 11-6 next year, you know? I don't know that, but I am very interested to see where Bidwell goes with this search.
Well, you transition nicely to our next team here, and that is, of course, the Texans for a second straight year. Go one and done with a coach. Lovie Smith is out. He had, of course, been promoted from defensive coordinator last offseason. I want to put this out there because Mike Florio actually wrote about it on Wednesday and just sort of floated like, okay, well, is it Josh McCown time now in Houston? Now that you... you know, Brian Flores is a candidate last year, and you didn't want to deal with the absurdity of passing on Brian Flores, who has this lawsuit against the NFL and his teams, to hire a head coach with zero experience who is not a minority head coach. Josh McCown is, I don't know, like after seeing how it unfolded with Jeff Saturday in Indianapolis, I don't know if Josh McCown is really a serious candidate. I can't say that for sure. We'll see how it plays out. But also the guy who is not there anymore, Jack Easterby, was kind of a seemed to have a relationship with Josh McCown. And you know, that might not have been the only reason they brought it, but I think it might have been part of the reason he was being considered.
So I think we should take this from a human perspective and a common sense perspective, and just to take listeners into a window in my life right now, my 8-year-old terrier cannot get on the couch, and he is just absolutely troubled by this development. And so we are going to you're hearing this live. I think he's got it. He's got the runway and the clearance and everything. I think he's just lost a little confidence. He's working with a slip disc right now, so he's on IR. Okay.
I thought he was just a little bit upset that Josh McCown is back in the news cycle.
I would say this. I had gotten an inclination a couple of weeks ago that maybe that there would still be sort of a Josh McCown thing, or that in general, I think teams are waiting on Josh McCown before they ever try to pull something like Jim Irsay pulled again. Josh McCown seems like the best option for teams who like the idea of immediately promoting a recently retired NFL player. Like, he's going to, let's put it in a simpler way. Jeff Saturday is not going to be the test case. Josh McCown is going to be the test case. Jeff Saturday right now is being looked at as like, that's a weird thing that guy did. And Josh McCown is going to be like, no, let's seriously try this. I don't know if that's going to be the pivot in Houston, because here's what I'm thinking. If you're Nick Caserio, you have to show, I would guess, you have to show some real signs of progress this year, no?
Yeah, yes.
Like, you can't.
Certainly.
You fired two head coaches after a year. You've won 6 games in 2 years. Mm-hmm. You bottomed out. You got the draft picks. You have the equity. And now it's time to put a future on the platform and say, like, here's where we're going, and I'm the guy that's steering the ship. And so just from a human perspective, right, are you willing to bank that on Josh McCown nailing this? Or do you get Jonathan Gannon and you say, okay, great. And listen, there's like 5 guys on the Eagles staff that will be head coaches in the next 10 years. I can almost lock that in. And so why not bring all those guys in? We're immediately going to at least get to the middle, you know, like I think we can get to the middle, and start mixing it up. And, you know, do you do something like that? And does that feel a little safer to you? Cause I don't know. I mean, I think it's a good job right now, because I think it's probably the best opening if you can ignore all the other weirdness and creepiness about it. Right.
Yeah, and I think you raised a really good point. Nick Caserio has kind of gotten weird with his past two hires. Not Josh McCown, but David Culley was a unusual hire, and it's done after 1 year. And then you promote Lovie Smith, who I don't think a lot of people thought would get a third shot as a head coach in the NFL, and you know, that doesn't work out. So is your answer, let's get weirder, or maybe let's try something a little more conventional with our young team that we're trying to build up here? But it's tough to say for sure, because there's a lot of kind of murmurs about is Nick Caserio too controlling? Does he want to be on the headset during games? Is he going to be in your ear? And I don't know. I don't know what the answer to that is. But just looking at this from, I think, a combination of basically potential to grow quickly, to succeed quickly. And we're speaking in relative terms. I don't think the Texans are close to a Super Bowl championship, but this is the team that you can kind of take over, and no one's expecting you to win 10 games in year one, but you could go win 6 or 7, especially in that division.
For sure. Yeah, I just don't know what Caserio's thought process is here, and I don't think we'll ever know how truly involved he is or however he wants to be. But I think this is one of those situations where ego's got to get out of the way and you got to show some real signs of progress. Now, I mean, the other possibility here, and this is what I wrote the other day, that, hey, whoever's getting this job is probably who was supposed to get this job a couple of years ago, right? And the sense that I got from the interview process last year was that, you know, Caserio viewed this as a 3-year project, with Culley being year one, whoever we were going to hire in year two having 2 more rough years, and then we're going to be on the come up. So if that's what Cal McNair was sold on, then I think everything's sort of sickly going to plan for them, right? You know what I mean? Like, you had two coaches come in and tank, just kind of like you wanted them to. And now these are the years where we start stepping up. And so in a lot of ways, I feel like whoever gets this job probably knew all this stuff was going to be happening for the, you know, in some way, shape or form. I'm not saying this coach is culpable in any way, but, you know, it was probably one of those things where Houston probably had their guy targeted last year, whether it's Josh McCown, whether it's Jonathan Gannon, whether it's D'Amico Ryans, I don't know. And then they're able to come back to them this year and be like, okay, now it's way better for you to take this job. Here you go.
Yeah. Yeah. Man, D'Amico Ryans. Wouldn't that be a nice turn back the clock there for the Texans?
I think it would be great from a PR perspective, right?
Yes. Like, and like, I hate to get into that because it's like, who cares? Like, Nick Sirianni was like the worst PR hire in the history of the last like 10 years. And look at how that worked out. But there is something to be said for just like, oh, yeah, like if you're a Texans fan, you can get behind this a little bit. You can feel good about it, not only because of what D'Amico Ryans has accomplished during his time as defensive coordinator in San Francisco, but obviously he was a foundational player for the Texans when they were not residing in the sewer of the NFL.
Albert, our esteemed colleague, our friend, made a really good point on D'Amico that I think is worth repeating, which is that, you know, D'Amico, okay, second round pick, but one of these guys that like has made millions and millions and millions of dollars in the NFL. And Albert's point, and I'll kind of take it in a different direction, Albert's point is he doesn't have to take the first job that's offered to him because this isn't life-changing money for him, right? Like, D'Amico Ryans has already made tens of millions of dollars in the NFL, so he can be like, no, I'm good here, you know, until I get the dream job. But I think that the immediate advantage to that is having a player who has made millions and millions of dollars and who has figured that out. To bring him into a locker room, to have him lead a group of people, I feel like is powerful in today's modern NFL, especially when you spent the last 2 years running that team into the ground intentionally, you know, like, it's like, no, okay, here's a guy that honestly is here for you, you know, I don't know, I would love the look of it, I think the optics of it would be great, but I don't know, man, I don't know how you've felt, but just from a gut visceral level, I feel like something weird's been going on here for the last 3 years, and we're now about to get to the season finale where we find out how weird it really was.
Let's stay in the AFC South here. A couple of coordinator moves this week. We'll start with Todd Downing out as offensive coordinator in Tennessee. I talked about this with you and Jenny two off seasons ago, where he was like in the ultimate no-win situation replacing Arthur Smith because Smith just ran that offense so well and there was kind of nowhere to go but down. And they went down and then they had the quarterback injuries. And man, from what I can tell, and I don't exactly have my finger on the pulse of Nashville, but boy, are people happy that he is no longer the offensive coordinator there.
Yeah, which is, you know, I guess it makes sense, but I don't know. It's sort of a weird hill to die on. And I know we'll get to the Commanders thing, which I feel like is the same thing, where it's like, okay, you're getting a new offensive coordinator. Are you getting a new offense that isn't relying on solely on the very broad shoulders of an aging running back? Like it's very hard. And that offensive line got picked apart and is getting old. I mean, it's hard to keep being the Titans, and they've done a good job at staying relevant, but you know, can they survive, without making some serious upgrades and spending some serious money? I don't know. It's going to be a tough offseason because you got to hire a GM. You have to get him aligned with Vrabel. You have to, you know, and you're going to have to spend, which they have shown no willingness to do on the open market, you know? So I don't know what the answer is here. But if I'm an offensive coordinator, am I jumping? Like, so let's say you're Bill O'Brien, right? And you know both, you know Bill Belichick and you know Mike Vrabel well, and they're probably both begging you to come on board. I mean, I'm just offense in general, you know, which one would you rather? I'd rather take the Patriots job.
Yes. Yeah, the Patriots are in a much better spot at this point as far as their personnel goes. And frankly, I think as far as their quarterback goes, we'll see what the future holds for Ryan Tannehill, though. But I think he's a guy who is built for a very specific kind of system, and Arthur Smith had kind of maximized that system. And again, there wasn't a whole lot Todd Downing could do trying to do an Arthur Smith impression. And, you know, like you said, there by the end of the season, there were no real answers. I mean, you're running out Malik Willis, you're running out Joshua Dobbs, who had just gotten there a couple weeks earlier. There's not really an offense coordinator who's going to come in there with a great solution for what they were doing. I thought they managed that Week 18 game as the Jaguars as well as you could have offensively. And frankly, they were right there with a chance to win it. That said, Todd Downing obviously didn't do himself any favors with the DUI arrest after what turned out to be their last victory on a Thursday night against the Packers. And, you know, John Robinson's out. It just felt like there was going to be a coaching level change as well. But we'll see. We'll see who comes in there. We'll see what they're going to do about this quarterback situation long term, because there's no easy answers for them there either. Unless, I don't know, maybe you can dip your toe into the world of a Derek Carr or Jimmy Garoppolo.
Yeah, I mean, this is going to be an offseason of answers in some way, shape, or form, right? But if you're, again, if you're Derek Carr, if you're Jimmy G, boy, I want that Jets job. I mean, that's the one I want. I feel like, you know, that's the one. The division's winnable. The weapon, like Garrett Wilson, is just an absolute star. You know, well, that's the one I want.
The division's not winnable, but the playoffs are.
Well, the playoffs are attainable. Reach. Sure. Yes. I don't know, man. Buffalo, you think is like that far out? Like, I mean, you know, defense is getting older.
I think Buffalo is that far out in front of the Jets. I do think, I think once the Jets have a sort of, you know, replacement level quarterback in place, I do think they're the second best team in that division. I think you were right all along. You've been saying it since like September. It's a really good team. And if you threw Derek Carr into that, and there's other stuff in New York market and, is he going to be comfortable with all that? I don't know, but just on the field, if you drop Derek Carr into this year's team, that is a team that's right on that second tier. I think it's, you know, Buffalo, Kansas City. Oh yeah, I think easy. It's Buffalo, Kansas City, Cincinnati, and I think the Jets are right there on that second tier, and perhaps the best of the second tier if they have Derek Carr in the lineup.
In terms of the Bills, Gary, to quote the first song from Frozen 2, the wind blows a little bit colder and we're all getting older. So, just saying. That's all I'm saying. Just keep that in mind. Man. Nothing that lasts forever.
Yeah.
No, did you ever watch Frozen 2?
It's mostly about the Bills. Matt Milano's in that, right? No, I don't think I ever saw the sequel. I don't even know. I think the first one kind of played in the background a couple of times when I was in the room. But I don't think I absorbed anything.
Okay. You haven't watched Frozen.
Like, correct. That is accurate. Yep.
Okay. Got it. All right.
Well, let's go to Washington. Scott Turner out as offensive coordinator. And again, it's another team where it's like, boy, you're toggling between Carson Wentz and Taylor Heineke. Obviously it's built to be a ground heavy team. I don't really know exactly what you want to do at this point offensively, other than we have to find a quarterback and then try and solve this thing.
Yeah, a quarterback who is going to be the loser of the veteran quarterback sweepstakes this offseason will go there. I mean, that's, you know, and so I think it's whoever kind of throws their hands up and is like, fine, okay, I lose. I'm going to Washington. But I think if it's Derek Carr, it's not a bad job, you know, like I think it's okay. But right, I think you probably have your hierarchy where, you know, maybe you get Jimmy G in Miami, which we had been talking about since the second Mike McDaniel got the job. Mm-hmm. If you're pairing folks off, you have, you have Derek Carr, you have Tom Brady going somewhere, probably, right?
Yeah.
You've Ryan Tannehill probably going somewhere. He's in the goulash. What's the if we put the mediocre NFL teams in a goulash? But this is more of a chowder, maybe. like the veteran quarterback chowder.
A chowdery goulash. Yeah.
This is day old seafood, right? It's stuff that used to be very expensive. That is a little bit less so now, right?
I mean, I feel like the Commanders are going to end up looking at like Andy Dalton and. Tannehill is going to be interesting. If I think he's going to be available, we'll see how it goes. But
you know who else though? I mean, Trey Lance.
Trey Lance is fat. I mean, I would if I could get my hands on Trey Lance or Jordan Love. I think it's look. I think they hold on to Lance ultimately out in San Francisco,
probably.
But man, that's so. It's so weird that Brock Purdy's good.
It is. It's really interesting. You know, it makes this whole tango more complicated. But it does make it more likely that the Commanders end up with a quarterback, which is to say that, boy, would I have liked to have seen Scott Turner with a real quarterback? Yeah, because I do think he did some cool stuff. I really do. I think you're just limited. Like, you're toggling between Taylor Heineke and Carson Wentz. And I saw the Washington Post report, which was Nikki Jabvala and Sam Fortier, who are great, criticizing the play calling. So I'm sure that there's some element of it there. I'm just saying that it looked, you know, you flip on Monday night game, Sunday night game, and you're like, okay, they seem to be trying. This seems to be okay. Yeah. But now if there was an issue with the rhythm of the play calling, timing of the play calling, complicating factors in the offense, then – you know, you have to move on, right? And I think if you're Rivera, you make that move to save yourself.
And Joe Woods out as defensive coordinator in Cleveland, which seemed to be a foregone conclusion in, like, early November. And then the defense actually played pretty well in the second half of the year. Again, the issue is, like, number one, they had a rash of injuries at linebacker, so they're sort of cycling through guys there. They were really not good enough on the interior defensive line, but they were built well in the back seven, but the back seven never really came together. And I don't know, in a way you're kind of hitting the reset button on sort of getting this chemistry up to speed with the guys on the back end. But, I don't know if there's a great solution here for this defense, other than let's get a little more stout up the middle. And then hope it works out in the secondary.
Yeah. I don't know what they're going to do. Theoretically, this would be a popular job if you're a seasoned defensive coordinator. I saw they just interviewed Jim Schwartz, which would be great for Myles Garrett. I don't know. I mean, you have a running game. Your defense isn't going to be on the field a ton. I think if Bill Callahan is still there, it's very attractive to me as a defensive coordinator, because you know that, you know, you're going to get taken care of via the game plan. But that said, this is a combustible situation. I don't know what's going on in Cleveland. It could be a weird place to work. It could very well be a weird place to work. And everything is very dependent around a quarterback who, towards the end of the season, I don't know. I mean, are you like, well, baby, I can't wait for 2023? Or are you kind of like, looks like this is going to require some time? Right, because here's my question. If you had, whatever, five games to get up to NFL speed, and then you stop again, and then you're going not at NFL speed again for, whatever, 7 months, and then you're starting again. And so did those five get, you know, is that the starting point for next year? Or is there another way to simulate this that he wasn't able to do before? I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of questions there.
It was... we're talking about such a small sample size, you can't go nuts with it, but Sean Watson had a really good second half against Washington. Like, even, you know, if you're sort of trying to pick it apart and find the negatives, he had a really good second half in Washington, and then he came back last week, and that offense was atrocious in Pittsburgh. And yes, Steelers are a good defense, and they have some problems, they present some problems, but aside from a series of, like, questionable penalties, the Browns didn't move the ball for an entire game again. So you basically had four and a half games of really bad offense and one really good half. And You don't have a choice. You're not making a switch at quarterback at this point. But yeah, it's a weird spot.
To cut to the core of it, right, Gary? I think if you have a bad season next year, that whole coaching staff is gone.
Yes.
So if you're a defensive coordinator, you're like, okay, maybe I got a shot at an interim gig, but they're not messing around with Deshaun Watson.
Yeah.
Plain and simple.
Mm-hmm. Rapid fire. We're going to do all sorts of rapid fire at the end of the show. But rapid fire, rank the five openings. Do you want to go first or should I?
I want to go first because I like to see I felt this way with Jenny too, where like the two of you are just right often and I'm not. And so it feels good when I'm in that area and it doesn't when I'm not. So I think Houston is number one for me.
Mm-hmm.
It drops off. Carolina is number two. I think Arizona is number three. I think Indianapolis is number four. And I think Denver is five.
Yeah.
Maybe yeah, I'll flip-flop Indy and Denver.
So I flip-flop. I have Panthers one. I do think the owner's gonna give you everything you want and is so desperate to find a quarterback that I don't know. I mean, is it a big issue if you just dump way too much money on Derek Carr or something like that? Not exactly your problem. I hope Steve Wilks keeps the job, but I think that Panthers opening is one. The Texans, I'd have to know a little bit more about what Nick Sirianni's involvement is going to be on game day. Cardinals at three. I'm fine with those jobs. Those three jobs, like, totally fine. Similarly with the Colts, where, you know, you're going to ask, you know, well, Nick Sirianni, what are you going to be doing on game day? You need some assurance from the owner that, like, you realize how bonkers this last year was, right? Like, or you could go all the way back to the getting rid of Carson Wentz. And Carson Wentz, you know, it's not absurd that they moved on, but it was a little bit wild to be like, oh, no, we can't possibly bring the guy back. Just give me anyone but that guy when he was, you know, showed signs of kind of being good enough on a really talented team. But you need the owner just kind of be like, oh, yeah, like, boy, you know, that's why pencils have erasers. I really screwed that year up and sort of go from there. And then Denver is just, it's a whatever. I mean, I don't want that job. If they offer me that job, I'm going to be like, no thanks.
Yeah. I think Denver is a good job if you have in writing somewhere, and we never see coaching contracts, right? If you had in writing somewhere, well, Gary, you and I saw a coaching contract, but when we did the story on the Browns tanking and Hugh Jackson, but you would need it in writing somewhere that, hey, I can get out of this in a year. Russell Wilson. Like, if I say yes, if I go into your office and I say whatever the code word is going to be, pull the trigger or whatever, you know, operation free Broncos, whatever it is, whatever the thing that you say is, then they just cut Russell. Then I would take the job. I think that would be cool. But just to have a code word for anything.
You know, yeah. Or, operation horsing around. Let's get out of this thing.
By the way, this is just a great aside. I was talking about youth hockey with a friend yesterday, and their kids' youth hockey club was a combination of two youth hockey clubs that were the Broncos and the Raiders. And so, like, it was once like the whatever, whatever Broncos and the whatever, whatever Raiders. So they combined them. And they had the kids vote on what the new name should be. And so they're the Horse Pirates, which is so good.
That's awesome.
I just I can't get it out of my mind, like, just how freaking cool it is that there's a team out there called the Horse Pirates.
It's really good because you run the risk of ending up like one of these minor league baseball teams that's like a little too wacky, a little too twee with the combination names, but just two nonsensical words. Yeah, that's excellent. Horse Pirates.
I know. And like just the visions that it evoke or whatever. So yeah, that my sequel to that is I'm only taking the Broncos job if I can get out of the Russell Wilson contract and I can rename the team the Horse Pirates, because that's what this is all about. That's the long con.
All right, let's run through the wild card round games. I don't even want to do a huge deep dive into these. We kind of know at this point what we're looking at. Let's just do winners. Just pick winners here. How about that?
Okay, Gary, so our wonderful editor, Mitch Goldich, had us do this. It's on the website today as of we're taping this on a Wednesday, so you can go see it. You can log on to your desktop. You can go to altavista.com. You can type in Sports Illustrated writers Gary Grambling Connor or Playoff Predictions 2023, and this will pop up. So you want to start in the AFC, you said?
I didn't say anything, but sure, we can start in the AFC.
I feel like you're an AFC guy.
Whatever.
So I got Buffalo Bills over Miami Dolphins.
I have
Bengals over Ravens. I mean, at this point, they could hang a 40 burger on Baltimore, which is a bummer.
It'll be the Skylar Thompson Dolphins, and then it looks like it's going to be the Tyler Huntley Ravens.
And even Tyler Huntley, I don't think practiced today, and we're taping this on a Wednesday. Like, it looks like he's probably going to be able to go, but man, what a weird situation, what an unfortunate situation there. I could see Burrow hanging a 40 burger on them here. And I have Jags over Chargers. I don't know what your thought is on this, but
I went Chargers over Jags. I'm giving a little more credit to Brandon Staley getting this defense. I mean, he had a great year calling the defense anyway, and then getting Joey Bosa back. And again, we waited all year for them to run their offense like Justin Herbert was on their team. And I think you're seeing some signs of that. And I think they're ready to take off. I don't want to spoil it. I jump back on my Chargers Super Bowl bandwagon, even though I do think they're clearly the fourth best team in the AFC, but I said it in the preseason, so now I have to get back on it.
Okay. I have the Chiefs over the Jaguars. I have the Bengals over the Bills, and I have the Bengals over the Chiefs. So okay. I have the Bengals going again from the AFC.
Okay.
DJ Reader is a monster.
I like that. Yeah, I'm cool with any of those. I mean, realistically, I think the Bills or the Bengals or the Chiefs will represent the AFC. I'm picking the Chargers, though. I have Chargers over Bills in the divisional round.
Wow.
So
common ground here. And I mean, I'm not, you know, I'm never, ever in a million years going to scoop in what happened to Buffalo into some sort of half-brained player analysis. But I do think that we would have to forgive the Bills if at some point they just got a little tired, right?
Yeah.
Like, every game they've been in has been an absolute slugfest. And emotionally, physically, like, I mean, at some point this has got to, it probably catches up to you. And maybe it doesn't, which is great and good for them. And phenomenal, and all the more power to you. But if it does, I don't want to hear that this team let anybody down this year. That's all I'm saying. Because this season was brutal.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's go NFC. Should I go first since you went first on the other one?
Yes.
Okay. So wildcard run, I have no upsets in the wildcard run. I have 49ers over Seahawks. I'm taking the Vikings over the Giants. I love the Giants. I love that the Giants overachieved. I do think the Vikings are, like the 16th best team in football, but I think the Giants are like the 20th best team in football, which is still really good considering what they had going into the year. But I couldn't, just the logic didn't add up for me taking the Giants here. So I have 49ers, Vikings, and I have the Cowboys or the Bucks. I mean, that's I think the Cowboys just got their crap game out of the way last week, and now they're ready to play some football.
All right. I have 49ers over Seahawks. I have Giants over Vikings. And I have Buccaneers over Cowboys. Because you know why, Gary? Tom Brady doesn't lose to the Dallas Cowboys. And this is a podcast of learned men, but I am going with the GOAT. And I'm going to pretend that I never said all those mean things about him because he's retiring. And likely will be elevated to some high power political position in our American society. And I want him to know that I've supported him since day one, and I picked him to beat the Cowboys.
I am. See, this is when everyone's going to get really upset with me.
Here we go.
I want to point out, 49ers are the best team in the NFC. The Eagles are Eagles and Cowboys are right there. Those are three elite teams. 49ers a little bit better than everyone. But again, I picked the Cowboys this summer, and then I backed off, and now I'm just going to do it again because I do have some electronic evidence that I had a Cowboys Chargers Super Bowl. So I'm picking the Cowboys over the Eagles, and I'm picking the 49ers over the Vikings.
Okay. I am picking the Eagles over the Giants and the 49ers over the Buccaneers. So,
okay.
Yeah.
And then I have Cowboys over 49ers. Cause again, I'm being stubborn and a jerk.
You are. Oh, it's like, at what cost, Gary? I mean, I had a Ravens Packers Super Bowl. At some time you have to move on. Like, you have to give up, you know?
I had, and then they both, like, came. When we were, like, week four, I was like, oh, my God, the Cowboys, like, they got Cooper Rush in there. Dak looked terrible in the opener. They're going to go, like, maybe 9-8 and sneak in. And then they ended up getting really good. So I had to jump back on the bandwagon. And I was done with the Chargers and around, like, Thanksgiving. And then it's like, all right, their dudes are back. They're letting Justin Herbert throw the forward pass. And here we go.
So you have the Cowboys representing the NFC.
Yeah, I have Cowboys over Chargers in the Super Bowl.
Golly. okay. I have Bengals over 49ers, Super Bowl MVP, DJ Reader. At least in theory, right? It'll probably be like Joe Burrow, right? But DJ Reader shuts down that running game. The only antidote to outside zone is penetrating interior defensive tackles. So that's what we got.
I know people are going to be upset. You can send me your feedback on Twitter. I have a new handle. It's at @mitchgoldich. Send your feedback there. I'll see it, and I'll take it to heart.
I did that. Do you know that? Like, I did that like 4 years, like 3 years
you
ago.
Did. I think that must have been where I stole it from.
Yeah, I like linked. I was like, you know, I realize this is going to be like kind of a controversial thing. And so like, if you want to reach out on Twitter, you know, here's my handle. And I just linked. I think I did it a few times. Like once I did it with Mitch, one time I did it with Tim Rowan, who's like one of the best writers and people in the world, just like the nicest person. And then he's just like, what's going on? And I can't stomach accountability for my own words or actions.
That's why we get along so well. The MMQB NFL podcast is Connor Orr and me, Gary Gramling. We are produced by Shelby Royson. SI's executive producer and podcast is Scott Brody, and our senior podcast producer is Dan Bloom. Mark Mravick is emeritus editor of the MMQB. Super Bowl champion Andy Benoit is the founder of the MMQB NFL podcast. Be sure to subscribe to this feed on Apple Podcasts. And once you do, please leave a rating and review. It really does help other people find the show, which is also available on Spotify, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.